You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
What I try and talk to companies and leaders about is bringing it down to dollar signs, really, if that's something that helps them make change and understand the importance, because they are losing a huge amount of money through burnt-out employees, whether they are losing productivity, whether they are losing because they are paying more in healthcare costs, whether that is in, you know, recruitment costs. They are spending a huge amount of money. Burnout is costing them, even if they aren't thinking about it.
Hey, corporate surfers, welcome back. This is part two of our special episode on burnout with the amazing Dr. Kim Hollingdale.
Yes, our favorite executive psychotherapist with an epic British accent is back. And if you haven't heard part one yet, we strongly recommend you go and listen to that one first.
Last week, we talked about the causes, symptoms, and behaviors of burnout. And today, we are diving deep into the role leadership plays in this whole burnout epidemic.
We begin today's episode with Eileen's firsthand experience with, you guessed it, burnout.
So I'm just going to speak to my experience, the two times that were very different times in my career that I experienced this. And there were two different companies and two very different moments. But I think the common thread for me was that there was a shift in one case, there was a shift in leadership, and that comes with a shift in vision and perspective and values and what's important and what's not important. So there was like friction there. It's like, okay, well, what I thought we were doing and achieving is this, and now it's shifting to this, and this is no longer matching for me. So that generated, like, I felt very lost. But in the other company, it was the same leadership, same company, and there was just a shift in. It had started more as a startup kind of vibe, and then it grew very quickly, and then it became a lot more structured, more processes, more bureaucracy. And so what was there at the beginning changed very drastically, and I did not feel comfortable in the way that the company was headed at that moment. So those two things led to there was a shift, and I just didn't feel like the shift was working for me. And it led to me feeling like I couldn't understand a job that I love so much. And in both cases, there were jobs that I loved. Like, there were jobs that made me excited, that made me want to go to work. My coworkers amazing. I had great bosses, but it was just like, I just don't want to.
Eileen, can I ask you if you had any like physical symptoms?
Oh yeah.
Those times that, like, what did you feel physically?
I could not get out of bed. The level of exhaustion, fatigue was like COVID. It's like, I can't breathe. I can't picture myself forcing myself to get out of bed to go there. The drive to the office to be like dreading going. And that is so, so not me. Again, for me, it's like, what is happening with me? What is wrong with me? Something is wrong with me. And there are many things wrong with me. But there were reasons. There were reasons for that. And I do think that at the same time, a lot of articles are talking to employees about, well, what can you do, right, to minimize this? And what can you do to change your perspective? But I think it's also very important in this conversation to talk about leadership. And with the knowledge that we have today, that back in the day, who, again, like, not employees, not leaders, nobody was talking about this. Who cared? But now with this knowledge, I think leadership can definitely take steps to prevent, mitigate. Like, no workplace is going to be perfect, and there are going to be many tough times. But there is a way, I think, to work with leadership and employees to acknowledge this and see how we can tackle it better. But there is culture issues, because corporate America thrives on everything that burnout reward. I mean, they reward everything.
Achievements and get
do more and exactly. Get there earlier and work weekends and work late, and then you're going to be successful. So there is a systemic problem here, no? And to quote one of my favorite people thinkers out there, Adam Grant, this see what you think about this, Kim. So he says that in burnout cultures, people are judged by the sacrifices they make. Hobbies, vacations, and even family time are viewed as distractions to penalize. In healthy cultures, people are judged by the commitments they keep. Interests outside work are seen as passion to celebrate. So cultures also need to, and I think we're in that moment, to step it up to have an open conversation of what the healthy boundaries are. And employees also need to set healthy boundaries. That was something that I did not do, and that's on me. Like, where do you say, this one I'm not going to work until 10 for the fifth time this week. So there's a both-sided right. thing here. I'm ranting, but go on.
It's a good rant.
You feel strongly about it because you experienced it at two different points in your life. So it's very real. It's very, it still riles you up because the fact that people are experiencing that now and you know physically what it feels like to experience, that sucks. But with all of everything that Eileen said, Kim, like, what is your advice? And do you coach organizations or leaders in terms of like, what's their role? What can they do? Because as Eileen pointed out, and you yourself said, there is a huge component that lies outside of the individual. It's the company culture. It's the leaders within that company, the mission, you know, whatever it is. If it's a hard charging sort of organization, people are going to feel that stress to perform and deliver and all of that stuff. And I just, on a long-term basis, I don't know how sustainable that is on the well-being of employees, but what would you say to leaders and managers as just, you know, advice how to deal with not creating that environment?
Yeah, it's such a challenging thing because as you guys are pointing out, a lot of buffering against burnout seems to be flying in the face of what corporate culture has thrived on for so long. What I try and talk to companies and leaders about when we're talking about this stuff is bringing it down to dollar signs, really, if that's something that helps them make change and understand the importance, because they are losing a huge amount of money through burnout employees, whether they are losing productivity, whether they are losing because they are paying more in healthcare costs, whether that is in, you know, recruitment costs. They are spending a huge amount of money. Burnout is costing them, even if they aren't thinking about
it. That is so smart. You're talking to them in terms that will resonate more than any other.
And will hopefully motivate, because I would love it to be the case that companies and leaders were interested in changing culture and eradicating burnout because they just altruistically care about individual happiness and health. I would love that to be the case.
Because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I definitely know there are people out there who do, but like trying to kind of put it in business language that they can kind of sell to a board, sell to shareholders, like, I think is important. And there is a huge amount of money to be saved, and in fact, money to be made if you have a really happy, vibing workforce. So a workforce that is not feeling the drain of burnout and is in fact feeling the empowerment and the excitement of a happy, healthy workplace are going to be knocking their work out of the park. And that is going to show in the quality, but also probably the quantity of work, depending on what type of field they're in. So I talk a lot in those terms. And then I talk about like sort of minimum responsibility. Minimum responsibility is not what we kind of make fun of on social media, which is human resources saying, don't quit, here's a lunchtime yoga session. Where we all go, fuck you! That isn't going to counter the 72 burnout exposure points that I'm otherwise living through in my working day. So I think of minimum responsibility as at least sort of doing that audit of what are your company culture, your company structure's burnout exposure points. Like, what is there? And it's not just the volume of work, which is normally as far as people's investigation stops. So helping them kind of understand what their threat points are, I think, is at least their minimum responsibility, so they have that awareness. And then I also work with individuals to try and understand what they're bringing to the table. Because to sort of counter your burnout experience, Eileen, mine was, what changed was me, right? I was doing the exact same work at the exact same pace with the exact same mix of kind of clients and people. And at some point, them patting me on the head and thinking I was like good and smart and successful, like just, I didn't know this at the time, but stopped meaning anything to me. And so I was just like trying to find some sensation somewhere. And so that meant, you know, Britain in the early 2000s, that meant every night drinking with clients and colleagues and using alcohol and feeling terrible and still carrying on, even though I wasn't getting any of that sense of internal satisfaction. And so I work with individuals now to A, recognize what is the environmental causes and what can they advocate for to change those, but also to recognize what's going on within them that might be a stress point as well.
Where were you when I was going through burnout? You'd have been a lifesaver.
Where was I when I was going through burnout? I just thought I was losing my mind. I was just like, I don't know, maybe I'm just weak.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to find somebody who can articulate what you're feeling because number one, they lived it. Number two, they studied it. Number three, they get it at a like almost like cellular level that you don't even have to explain it almost.
And more importantly, with that accent, like it's a win-win. So there's another thing that I think that it's important to address. And I love that you can work with leadership and with individuals, but how the leaders in an organization can set the tone for this, right? Because if the CEO or the president or whoever is at the top of your organization is a person sending emails Sundays at 11 and expecting a reply, what do you expect the manager to be doing? So it just trickles down to everything. So I think it's really a moment where leaders have to take a step back and think about what their actions mean, because it just that will burn out a whole culture. And I've been in cultures like that where it was literally Sunday at 11 at night. And it's like, oh, you could see like all the senior management going crazy because the CEO just asked for whatever that was. And all the rest of us like, OK, plan A, plan B, plan C. And you knew you couldn't wait until Monday because then you were not committed. Then you're not, you know, you're not wearing T-shirt of a company.
You're not responsible.
Yeah. And then in a different Deloitte study that we found is when they surveyed leaders in the C-suite and employees, the way that they saw their wellness, the employee and their leaders is vastly, vastly different. So the C-suite tends to feel that their employees are doing pretty good, you know, or maybe it's not great, but it's at 70%. And then when you see what the employee said, it's at 40%. So there's a very big disconnect between how executives feel that their team's wellness is, where it's at, and where it's actually at. So it's not surprising for them not to be doing enough because in their minds, it's okay.
Everything's fine. It's such a tricky thing because how are they getting that idea that everything's fine? Like the cultures that I have been in, even their most friendly ones, we are still feeling like we have to pretend everything's fine and we love the work and we're doing great, even when we're not. Like we feel like sometimes that's part of the deal. So even in our worst moments, we're like, oh no, it's great here. Oh, and I don't mind working. Like it's how can we create that sense of, I guess, coming back to this other buzzword that I'm using, psychological safety, so that people can be honest and know that saying that I'm feeling burnt out or saying that this doesn't work for me or that I'm not feeling connection with this project isn't going to be a threat to our career. It's going to be heard by leadership as like useful information that they can then do something with to improve their entire kind of workforce. It's not something to be punished and shamed for, which is making me think of in one of the agencies that I worked at, we all collectively like felt those hard hustling vibes. And so the punchline to anyone suggesting anything wasn't going okay or that we were overwhelmed or that this was too much or that was unreasonable was a sort of sarcastic, well, have you thought about trying harder?
Damn. Gotta love the British, man. I mean...
I think it was amazing. And we all did it to each other. We all got on top of it.
Well, but that's so indicative of the time and the place that you were at, right? Like, can you imagine saying that today? Like, even joking, somebody's going to throw something at you and be like, you insensitive bitch.
But I feel like some of us worry that that's kind of going to be the response. Like if we put our head sort of above the parapet and say, this isn't working right, this is not an okay structure, or this is a challenge, that somebody's just going to be like, well, you should try harder. You're the problem. You're the weak one. You're the one, you know, who has issue with this. Nobody else is saying it. And we're like, well, nobody else is saying it because we haven't created a environment where this is up for discussion. Yeah.
And we've talked about, and we put quite a bit of emphasis on how leadership should take this on in with, you know, under new light and trying to tackle it from the well-being and the financial return point of view, because it's in their best interest for their people to not burn out. But speaking of, you know, to the employees, and a lot of listeners of ours are in middle management, they're in the grind, they're in that moment of their careers that you've pinpointed. What advice would you give to them as somebody that's going through this, or that's feeling that they might be about to go through this? What would you say to them?
A question before you go on. Is this something you do just yourself? Or I would imagine you have a conversation with your boss and say, listen, I'm struggling. Like, do you involve possibly your other pain points at your organization while you're doing this? Or do you wait? Hmm. What's your suggestion there?
If they are, you think, going to be helpful and supportive of this, great, let's bring them in. If we have yet to figure out whether they're helpful or supportive, we might start this process off on our own. Like, let's, for the next couple of weeks, give ourselves some space. And then in that space, let's think about a few things so we can figure out what a longer term plan is. But first thing often is we're normally, when we're in that sort of burnout or pre-burnout stage, we're normally so busy and moving so fast and so conflicted and confused that we haven't actually had an opportunity to really kind of like pass out what's going on. And so that's sort of like first port of call, with support of boss if that's part of it. Often another conversation is with support of whoever we're living with, right? Like if we need to parcel out some time for ourselves, that might be talking to a partner about how we're spending our time or taking on household responsibilities. And so first thing is a little bit of breathing room so that we can then do whatever we do need to do to explore more deeply. Having made fun of yoga classes earlier, one of the most powerful forms of self-care, if you only have a finite amount of time, is breath work, yoga. It's good for helping our nervous system recover from stress. And so if somebody only realistically has 10 minutes for themselves in a day, that's what I'm going to help them to do. Teach them how to do it or use what they already have.
Because interjection here, because Kim not only, you know, was an amazing executive, PhD, and she is also a yoga teacher, because that's the way she rolls.
Are you really?
Yes.
I would love to take a yoga class from you.
And let me chime in here, because as a person who would very much laugh at people that did yoga.
And me. In my face.
Yes. Remember?
Multiple times.
I was just like, oh, yeah, sure. Now I do yoga 4 times a week and it's been really, really helpful. More than, you know, the physical part of it, which is important. But the whole breathing, the whole turning off your mind, the whole going into yourself and the breathing, again, I used to make a lot of fun of these people. I vouch for it 100%. It really does help.
Dude, right there with you. Like, I grew up with a mum who was super into all these things. And I was like, because my mum was into it, I was the opposite. I was like, that's stupid. I want to do like the cool stuff, not the like hippy dippy granola stuff, which is what I thought it was. And then as I got into my psych training, I was always very interested in sport. So I was always very interested in anything body-wise. And I came across all this great research about breath, the nervous system, how we manage and process stress through our body. And so the deepest cynic in me is now completely on board and I recommend it to everyone. So
makes two of us.
Yes.
It's good for your mind, people, for your mind. It's exercise for your mind. So yes, I would never have thought of myself saying this, but yes. And I know we're headed towards the end of your time, Kim. So
that sounds so terrible. Can you rephrase that? That
sounds, yes.
I mean, I know I'm not at my best. But I'm hanging on for a few more years.
Thanks, Glenda, for clarifying, because that did sound terrible. So it's time for our section of corporate confessions. Can you please say that with your accent?
Corporate confessions.
So the first question we're going to ask you, because you have this very specific profile. So what do you miss about working in corporate?
I miss being in the trenches with a team of folks. Like, some of my worst times absolutely were in corporate, but some of my best times were being in that trouble zone with some great people. So
100%.
That part for sure. I do miss that social part of it and the support of other people who are just going through the same shit show you are.
I 1000%, yes. We relate to that completely.
And what do you not miss about working in corporate besides burnout?
I do not miss waking up in the morning knowing I'm going to be working to somebody else's agenda. I love, for good or for bad, I burn very, very hot when I'm interested in things and then move on. Like, I have a bunch of stuff that I love to learn about and I want to wake up every single day and be like, today I get to do what I'm feeling like inspired and called to work with. And, you know, that doesn't always mean that every minute is a barrel of laughs, but I am no longer slogging away for months on something I do not give a crap about because somebody else has told me that's what I have to do.
Lovely. Preach.
Yes. Next question for you, Kim. What's harder, being a corporate manager or working as a psychotherapist?
I think they're both hard in different ways. I think it might be easy to say that working as a therapist, the kind of hard is intense sometimes, and the responsibility you feel to others, perhaps, or at least I can speak for myself, feels more so than it did in the corporate manager role. But again, I work with folks that I love and I choose what I do, and that feels very different to the corporate manager role. I think one of the toughest positions out there is an account manager in an agency structure, which is sort of in mild field, like maybe 5 years in. So it wasn't, you know, high, but it was, you were responsible for everything, managing down, managing up, managing clients, like everything kind of went through you. And so even when you weren't, you know, in office hours, you were working, you were always working. And that felt very draining. With therapy, I'm always thinking about my clients, but we're also, there's times when we're there working together and times where I can kind of decompress and work quietly by myself. And so that works better for me. That was a very long-winded answer, which is harder. I'm going to go with corporate manager. I'm far happier and far more relaxed as a therapist than I ever was.
I feel you, girl. I feel
you.
Yeah,
so.
But now, thinking through your corporate life and through your corporate experience, what was the most awkward moment you can remember having? What was that crazy moment that if you look back at it now, you're like, what, did that really happen?
Because we really like to, in corporate, you tend to showcase, like you said, like the highlights and the milestones and the certificates.
The beautiful things. And especially in PR, everything's great and beautiful and wonderful. But was there ever a shit show moment, an embarrassing moment, any sort of weird, crazy, awkward thing?
Not stellar.
not stellar things. I think that's a good way of putting it. Like, nothing feels too crazy upon reflection. Like, I do hear crazy things all the time. So by comparison, I'm like, oh, it was fine. But in my efforts to change what I was feeling back in the day when I didn't know what burnout was, didn't know what was going on, I did a lot of what I lovingly call rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I jumped jobs a bunch of times. I jumped client types a bunch of times. And then possibly my most dramatic was when I moved entire continents to see if that would fix it. And then when I got there, turned out, didn't fix it, and, you know, burnt several professional bridges because I arrived and was, surprise, surprise, still burnt out and not interested in doing the work. But here I was, thousands of miles from home, leveraging every kind of contact I had to get the job, only to find I still couldn't function. So that was probably the most dramatic move I made.
So not what I was expecting. So so much deeper than I was expecting. No, no, because it's interesting the way she thought about like her whole journey and the path, and you think, okay, this is going to fix it. Now, if I change clients, if I change this, and you're like ticking off the boxes of like what you think is going to fix it. And then what was that moment for you, I got to ask, when you realize, oh shit, I've done all of this stuff and nothing is fixing it.
It's me. Hi. I'm the problem. It's me.
Don't think too much. We don't have money to pay for that song.
It's so true. Prior to the album coming out, I always come back to that phrase, everywhere you go, there you are. Yeah. Have you heard that before?
You're like, I can't escape
me. Which people have always said to me and is meant to, I think, be very comforting. But in that stage of my life, it seemed more like a threat. I was like, oh, shit. Right. I thought everything would be different if I did this, but no. What was the moment? I do actually know, because now upon reflection, it was very meaningful for me. But it was a moment where I was in this job in Australia. That's where I had moved.
That is a job. I thought you were thinking New York. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess you crossed the pond, I guess. Yeah. No, you really went around the world.
I just went London to Sydney. Why not? And I'd messed something up. Like, I hadn't done something. I think it was something small, but I think it was like the last straw. And I remember these people who had so kindly kind of given me the opportunity to make this move, like calling me into the room and being like, what is going on? Like, we thought you were amazing. We were told by all these people that we know and trust that you were amazing, and it's just not meeting up. And at that moment, I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm not performing. And you know, the idea of letting people down for me was like a horror show. So the fact that I had done it to folks who had really given me this opportunity was just devastating to me. And so that was the moment. But it was also very touching for me, a very restorative moment, because these people also made it very clear that they still valued and liked me. And I was like, this is amazing. So I was worth more than my working ability. They were like, look, we get it. Sometimes it doesn't pan out or you're not feeling this way, but like, we still think you're a good person. We still like you. We want to stay in touch. And I was like, that transformed everything for me, that I wasn't just only valuable if I was performing.
Wow. So I think the key takeaway here is that we need to go to Australia and find jobs there.
I'll introduce you to the best possible people.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. You know, that's not very common.
No. And it found me, as I say, in both the worst moment, it gave me the best moment that, again, at the time I didn't really recognize, but that really helped me make the final move out of that field and able to let go of what I thought my value was.
Any final surfing strategies that you can give the listeners, as not only as a burnout expert and psychologist, but as somebody who's been through there, someone who teaches yoga and is also a professor.
Has her shit together.
Yes, somebody who has their shit together. Any final words for people who are navigating in corporate waters that can be very tricky and can be exhausting? What would you say?
I think what I would say is, don't feel beholden to it, which probably feels like sort of counter advice to anyone who's already in corporate, but it took a huge, huge amount of self-talk and self-examination for me to leave corporate, only to discover that it was actually very simple and very easy to do. And so, not that I want to encourage everyone to just flee their corporate job, but if you do find yourself feeling dissatisfied, feeling miserable, finding that it's not the place for you, please don't feel stuck for as long as I did. Know that there are great things you can do with the skills that you have and with the skills that you enjoy. And life is, I think, just far too short to look ahead at the next, you know, 30 years that you might be working and not feel at least a little excitement about it.
So well said. So well said.
Love that advice. And I think just adding to that, for those that, you know, maybe leaving corporate isn't for you, I do think that finding a corporate environment where you feel valued and seen, that is critical. Because if you have that feeling that, like, to your point, like, I am valued beyond my performance on this day on this thing. But you're in a place that is supported, that has psychological safety, where you feel seen by your bosses and you have a purpose. That is what you should strive for and not settle for less. Find a place where you feel valued as an employee and as a person. Was that beautiful?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Great advice. And at the very least, start doing yoga and breathing, people. Come on.
Go ahead and talk about, you know, your website, your business, whatever you want to plug, because I'm sure lots of people will be interested.
Yeah, thank you. Well, anyone who does want to chat with me, I love talking to people about this, as you can probably tell from the fact that you've not been able to shut me up. So if anyone does find themselves in a situation dealing with burnout or have questions about it or just want a little bit of advice, I do offer some free time. So if you want to chat with me, you can go to my website, burnoutmademedoit.com. And through that website, you can sign up just for a free, like, 30-minute chat with me. And so happy to offer that. I do also have the Burnout Made Me Do It podcast. But if you do want coaching individually, or your company could use some assistance in figuring out how they can better prevent burnout, then you can hit me up. And my email address is kim@burnoutmademedoit.com.
Great.
Fabulous.
Great, great, great. I have a feeling you're going to get hit up a lot, Kim. I really, really do.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much, you guys. I really enjoyed talking with you guys.
This episode of Surfing Corporate was produced and edited by me, Eileen Mercier, and made better by the feedback of Glenda Packmans. If you like this episode, share it with a friend and give us a 5-star rating. Follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn, and sign up for our newsletter at surfingcorporate.com/subscribe. Our original theme music is by Chaligo Music. The rest of our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much for listening. Hang in there.